All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Philip Drew, Administrator, and our next guest is Aaron Russo. He's just entered the race for the nomination of the Libertarian Party for president. He's an Emmy Award-winning producer, 6 times nominated for an Academy Award. He's producer of the movies The Rose and Trading Places. He ran for governor of Nevada in 1998 and is now seeking the Libertarian nomination for president. Welcome to the show, Mr. Russo.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. How you doing?
Oh, we're doing just fine. I am, anyway. I don't know how everybody in the audience is, although probably if they listened to the last hour, they might be a bit depressed. We learned all about corruption and money in American politics, and primarily concerning corporate welfare and giant contracts for companies that administration members used to be part of and that sort of thing.
Well, they're probably watching the football game, so don't worry about it.
Oh, okay. I didn't even know there was a football game. Whatever.
No. What's happening in America? I'm sure your last guest was very smart about corporate welfare. And, you know, the thing about that is that, if the government didn't have so much power, they couldn't do all this corporate welfare. And you wouldn't have all this lobbying, right? The fact that the government doesn't really follow the Constitution, and the Constitution has sort of been put in the dustbin, gives the government tremendous amounts of power. And because they have all that power, all these corporations and their lobbyists go after the government because that's where the power is. And with payoffs and all kinds of remuneration, they get their way most of the time in America today. But if you actually follow the Constitution, the government wouldn't have all the power they have today, and you wouldn't have all this corporate welfare.
So it's not so much Halliburton's fault as it is the national government's fault.
Well, it's everybody's fault. I mean, to do what Halliburton did, is a lot of greed involved in that, and they know what they're doing is wrong, and they know they're paying off the government to do it. And Cheney was head of Halliburton. I mean, they're all in bed together, but the fact of the matter is, I'm not saying it's more the government's fault than the corporate's fault. Corporate world's fault. What I'm saying is, if the government didn't have that power, neither one could do what they're doing. So forget laying blame. Just know that they didn't have that power, neither one could do it. And that's the answer. I mean, if you want to look for blame or fault, then you have to look at both of them.
So it's your assertion, then, that the government is no longer bound by the Constitution?
It's a fact. It's more than my assertion. I mean, the government has taken tremendous powers that they don't have. And as an example, let me give you a point of view. Let's take marijuana for an example. Okay, it's not the most important point in the world, but it's a good example. Let's take marijuana. Now, the federal government has all these laws, federal laws, stopping people from smoking marijuana. Even in states where they pass laws saying medical marijuana is okay, the federal government comes in and says you can't do that, even if you're sick, no matter what the reason, even though it works as a medicine. Now, the fact of the matter is, the federal government has no authority in the marijuana issue. And here's what I mean by that, because when I tell that to people, I say, what do you mean, it's the federal government, they can do whatever they want with marijuana? I said, no, that's not true. Go back to Prohibition, when liquor was illegal. How did liquor become illegal in America? The government couldn't just make a law saying liquor was illegal. They wanted to, but they couldn't do it. They had to pass a constitutional amendment, giving them the authority to make it illegal, giving the federal government the power. So 2/3 of the Senate passed the law, 75% of the states ratified the law, and that gave the government the legal authority to make liquor illegal. And it was proper, and I don't think it was very smart, but it was legal and just within the law. In marijuana, nobody's given the government any authority. They've not passed any constitutional amendment. They don't have it under the Constitution. They've just taken the authority to make it illegal because they choose to.
It's funny, too, that the federal government passed its first national anti-marijuana laws around the time they were repealing the constitutional amendment for prohibition, 1937.
Is that when the first law was passed against marijuana?
The first federal law, yes, sir.
The first federal law. Well, you just told me something I wasn't aware of. But if that's the case, that's even something to even look at that, because you're saying it happened the same time they were repealing the prohibition, they were making marijuana illegal.
Yes, sir. It was the New Deal.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was FDR, and the, really, they just, the only reason FDR got behind repealing prohibition was just because he needed the tax money. That's probably the same reason they outlawed pot.
I thought that marijuana was still smoked illegally in the 40s. Are you certain of that fact?
Yes, sir. It was the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. In fact, it was found unconstitutional.
The Marijuana Tax Act?
Yes.
Was it a tax act? Was it a tax on it, or did they make it illegal?
Right. Well, that's an interesting point. They did both, and that's why it was found unconstitutional in the 70s, was because the Supreme Court said it was double jeopardy, because basically what they were saying was, in order to buy a tax stamp, you have to come in and bring them the pot to get the tax stamp. But, of course, if you have the pot without the tax stamp, then you're in violation of the Tax Act. And
it was
a double jeopardy kind of thing. And it didn't get overturned till the 70s, but then, like you say, there were already 1,000 pot laws on the books by the 70s.
It's so stupid. But the marijuana and that whole thing, you know, that's really a minor issue. It's not minor in the sense it takes away your rights as an individual. But with what the government's doing in some way, the Department of Education, where does the government have the authority to have a Department of Education? They don't have that. That's why kids are so stupid today. Once the federal government got involved in education, you know, the education went down the toilet. You know, people don't. I mean, I remember when Bill Clinton one year was giving a State of the Union speech and he was talking about having national testing standards, you know? And the whole Congress stood up and applauded, screaming, yay, yay, yay. And I thought to myself, how stupid could they be? Once you have national testing standards, you can have national teaching standards. And the federal government's going to be telling people what the kids have to learn. And they're going to be establishing the rules. And that's a giant mistake. And that's why kids don't understand the Constitution today. Not kids. Most people don't understand the Constitution today. And that's a great deal to do with what's wrong with our country. And it's very important to get the Constitution back in order. You know, back in its rightful place in our country.
Well, let's get to war. That's the most important thing to me this year.
What I'm talking about, the war issue?
Yes, well, I mean, to be fair, I think the election of 2000 is going to, I'm stuck in a time warp here. The election of 2004 is going to be somewhat of a referendum on American foreign policy. So I want to know where you stand.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, as you probably know, I on my website, but I like to put the name out there, russoforpresident.com, and the four is F-O-R, russoforpresident.com, R-U-S-S-O, for F-O-R, president. And on the website, we're getting a lot of mileage out of this. A lot of people are going there because we have a lot of information that there's going to be a military draft coming right after the election. And it's going to be for both men and women, between the ages of 18 and 26. And if you go to the website, you'll find lots of information. You'll see the Department of Defense posting, looking for employees for the Selective Service System to still draft. You'll see a $28 million budget authorization for the draft boards. You'll see the actual bill that was put into Congress by Hollings and Rangel. And you can bank on it, because America's in 130 countries around the world. And it's unfortunate that we've done all this empire building, and we have a terrible unemployment problem. So they're going to impose a draft, one to help alleviate the unemployment problem on their part, because the economy is in serious problems, and also to expand the empire building of America. We have to support 130 bases and troops in 130 different countries. And we started a petition on the website so people can sign up if they're against the war, against the draft, rather. And obviously I'm against the war. I totally don't believe in this war. I think it's a fraud. And I think that the draft that's coming may be a really good rallying point for the youth of America to express themselves, as we did when I was a youth in the Vietnam times. And I'm hoping that we get lots of music lax to listen, to pay attention to what's happening, and put on concerts around the country to stop the draft before it starts. Because it's definitely going to happen. And, you know, kids are going to be sent into caves in Afghanistan and Iraq and be shot and killed. What? To support Halliburton and Bechtel and all this nonsense, you know, that's going on in this country. And the fact is, we have a two-party system. And if you vote for one of the two parties, you're really wasting your vote, because nothing's going to change. You know, the two parties try and tell you, and people try to tell you all the time, that, you know, if you vote for a third-party person, you're wasting your vote. That's really not the truth. The truth is, if you vote for the two parties, you're wasting your vote. Because no matter who wins, nothing's going to change. It doesn't matter which one wins. You have the same thing going on. And so, I mean, even if Howard Dean wins, who's probably the best of all the Democrats. You know, everybody says he's the anti-war candidate. Well, he's really not. It's, you know, it's a deception. Because Howard Dean has already said he'll send more troops into Afghanistan and more troops into Iraq, and he'll extend the war, and that we should impose democracy on Iraq instead of letting the people there be free to do it as they wish of their own will, you know. And so, whether George Bush wins or Howard Dean wins or whoever wins, you're going to have the same thing. And nothing's going to change in America, and you're going to enter into a totalitarian police state, and the Patriot Act is, you know, is very strong here now based on the war. And you know, all this has got to stop, and Americans have to get their individual freedoms back. And that's what's happening here, and it's very, very unfortunate. We're heading into very, very dark times, and you have a disgusting, I mean, you have a, I think the worst president in the history of America at the helm. You have deficits that are beyond understanding. You know, they're talking about the economy being really good now, which is really a lie. First of all, unemployment is horrible. People can't find jobs. Secondly, the cost of living is unsustainable. Many people I know are living 3, 4, 5 people to a house, you know, different families. The cost of living is sustainable. People running out of unemployment benefits, so they're not even counting the unemployment reports. You have a $44 trillion unfunded liabilities in America that someone has to pay for. And we're in this really, really bad situation where to make it look like the economy is getting better, the government sent out a bunch of checks last year calling it tax returns, you know, cutting a cut of taxes. But basically, it's no different than if you sent if you drop money out of a helicopter. Let's assume you drop money out of a helicopter all over the country, and people picked up all these dollar bills and started spending it. Of course it would look like things were better. Because people would have all this manufactured money created out of nothing that was just given to them. Oh, go spend it. You know what I'm saying? So all of a sudden everything looks better. But it's not really a fundamentally sound way that you build an economy. It doesn't work. It's just a shot to make it look, for appearance sake. It's not really any better. And what it does, it depreciates the value of the dollar. And so what the numbers they're using, the statistics they're using, are really artificially done. And now we have a terrible economy. We're in a terrible war. We have a terrible police state unfolding. And it's going to stop. And the two parties are both going to continue the situation that we're in. And so I decided to run. Hopefully I can get my voice out there and people can hear the other point of view. And have someone else to vote for who has a different point of view about things. That'll make a change.
Yeah, I think your point about the difference between Bush and Dean actually being that Dean would prefer to send even more troops into Iraq.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if he wants to send more or less than, I mean, because you're not going to know how many they're going to send there in office. Who's going to send more or less, you know, is not important. The fact is they both want to force democracy on the Iraqi people, and they're both going to send more troops than do it by force. And the fact is, America's not even supposed to be a democracy. You know, when you really look at it, democracy is not a good form of government. You know, America's a republic. You say the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. When we were under a republican form of government, 99% of the people couldn't take away the rights of 1%. Your rights were yours. You could do whatever you want as long as you didn't create harm on anybody else. You didn't commit theft, fraud, violence. It's your right to do with it as you wish. Now, they tell you it's a democracy, and that means 51% control 49%. And so that's not a good form of government. 49% of the people have to do what 51% want. That's nonsense. You know, it used to be 99% could make 1% do what they wanted. You could be an individual. You could be free. America's not supposed to be democracy. They just tell you that to psyops. You know, if you keep hearing something long enough, you begin to believe it. And we're a democracy only in the sense of how we cast votes. You know, who we elect to office. That's done through democratic means, through majority, which is fine. But once the person who gets into office, they still have to follow the Constitution. And it's a Republican form of it. It's a Republican Constitution. Well, each individual has their rights. It's not done by majority rule. And so...
So now here we are. We've turned our republic into a democracy, and now we're off overseas forcing democracies on other people. Under majority rule, by the way. The majority backed the war against Iraq a year ago.
Well, I don't know if the majority. That's another thing. You don't even know what the majority wants. You don't know what the polls are really saying. It's the way they frame the questions. The people that control the media, and I come out of the media. You know, I come out of Hollywood. I made lots of movies and TV shows. I did all that stuff. I know all the people out here. They control the media, and they control what people think and what people are taught to think. And you don't really, you know, you can frame a poll many different ways to get the results you want, to get the desired results. And it's the same problem you have with electronic voting. If you ever go to electronic voting in this country, we're dead. Because the electronic voting, you can never recount the vote. And who's ever in charge of the code and what goes on in the computers, and you know that could always be fixed, who's in charge of what decisions are made, you know? They'll tell you how people voted, even if it's not true. And you can cast a vote on electronic voting, and you press the button, and this vote travels down this electronic highway, and you have no idea where it ends up. You don't know if it ends up on what you wanted or not. And you must always have paper ballots. And I hope people understand that and never fall for this electronic voting, because it would be a terrible, terrible thing to allow to happen here.
Okay, back to foreign policy real quick.
Sure.
You've made yourself pretty clear on Iraq. But I wonder, if you had been president in 2001, what would you have done after September 11th?
What I would have done? I would have found out who did it and gone after them.
In a way different than George Bush did?
Well, I don't know. No one's ever seen any proof of who's done it yet. I've never seen any proof about who did it. If Osama bin Laden did it, and he's the one that's responsible, and he was the mastermind, then I'd go after Osama bin Laden and get his butt, and never let him out of my sights. And you know they could get Osama bin Laden if they wanted to. I mean, they flew the bin Laden family out of the space the next day, you know. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened there, but I know that the American people deserve to see all the evidence of who did it, and I know there should be an investigation about what happened that day. And I think, and whoever did it should be. I don't know what you do with people who did what they did that day. It was such a disgusting event. I don't know how they could pay for that crime severely enough. But to this day, no one's ever seen the evidence of who did it. I mean, I don't doubt that Osama bin Laden did it. He probably did. You know, but I'd like to see the evidence of it. And I know one thing: I wouldn't have been diverted to go into Iraq under the pretense of 9/11. I'm focused on bin Laden if he's the one that did it.
So, the whole unending war on terror, quote unquote.
Exactly. It's an unending war. Dick Cheney the other day said this thing's going to go on forever. Be prepared for an eternally long war, you know, which is why the draft's going to come in. And it allows the government and the neocons in office to control the American public and the youth. You know, and it's a disgusting situation, and it's got to be changed, because America is really becoming a fascist country, and people have got to wake up and say, you know, I don't want this in my country. I mean, you've got this unending war on terrorism, drafting, and taking children, killing our kids, and no one's ever seen the evidence of it even. And it would seem to me that it's up to the government to show us what really happened that day. Let's see the evidence of what happened. Let's know why it was Osama bin Laden. Let's see that, you know, and then focus on getting him, you know. That's what should be done. You should see people should see the evidence, and then we should focus on getting him, you know. And instead of not seeing the evidence, not knowing, except being told all the time, and then drafting kids for this eternal war that's going to last forever on terrorism, I find it disgusting. I mean, we went to Iraq and killed and maimed all these children, all these people over there. And we killed, I was more afraid of George Bush than I was of Saddam Hussein. I mean, it's George Bush who can wiretap my phones, you know, do all these things to you, you know. Saddam Hussein wasn't a threat to America. And he might have been a bad guy. There's lots of bad guys. You know, my belief is what we went there for the oil. And I know we went to Afghanistan to get by the Caspian Sea. And so the whole air in America today is very militaristic. And, we're becoming a militaristic nation. And I think it's fairly flimsy why we are.
So am I to understand that if you were president, that you know, the Department of Homeland Security and the Patriot Act 1 and 2 would be doomed?
If I were president, if I become president.
If you are president, if you become president.
Abolish, babes. Goodbye, Patriot Act. Goodbye, Homeland Security. Stop this. Pull our troops out from 130 countries. Bring our troops home. You know, defend our borders, you know. Take care of America. You know,
let's stick with that for a second.
Trade with everybody freely. I'm not saying you should become isolationist. You know, and they'll try to put that on me, you know. It's not about that at all. It's about America taking care of America and not getting involved in foreign entanglements that we shouldn't be getting involved in. We have no right to empire. What other country has troops in 130 countries around the world? Nobody. Only us. You know, we have the biggest military budget, bigger than the next 25 nations combined. Combined! If you have the next 25 nations in military and defense spending, we spend more than the next 25 nations, Russia, China, Japan, everybody put together. I mean, you know, we're the ones that are being the imperialists here. We're the ones that are forcing our way on everybody. You know, stop it. Be a peaceful nation. Allow people their freedom. You know?
You brought up the borders there. When I interviewed Michael Badnarik, another libertarian candidate for president here on this show, he described his view of the border, I think basically along the lines of that we ought to have real good security to keep out any illegals, but that we ought to make it perfectly legal for anyone to come on in, and then that way there would be no reason for there to be a bunch of illegal immigrants, sort of a giant wall with a wide open door.
Well, I don't know what he meant by letting anyone under certain conditions, or just letting them.
Well, he was saying, you know, as long as they're not felons.
So anyway, I mean, any amount, you mean?
Sure, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses.
No, I don't agree with that. You know, I mean, if that was the case, there'd be no reason to have illegal. What you're saying is, let's take in millions and millions of illegals instead of having. Why do you need anybody at the border? If everybody can come illegally, why would anybody come in illegally?
Exactly.
I don't quite understand that. I can't believe that's what he meant. But I mean, but I can't comment on what he said because I've never met Michael, and I hear he's a lovely fellow, and I hear he's a very smart man. I know my point of view about it is that. America should allow in a certain amount of foreigners a year, and that's it. You know, according to the needs of our country, you know, and illegals should not. And as long as you have welfare, you cannot have illegal immigration in this country. And now, if we had no welfare, if this was not a welfare state, I would probably change my mind. You know,
right. Well, and I think that's basically the line where Badnarik came to as well. But he said, hey, you know, it's not the immigrants' fault that we are socialists. That's our fault. And if we want to complain about them using up all our social services, well, let's quit being socialists. But that's not the poor immigrants' fault. That's our fault.
It may not be their fault. No one thinks it's their fault. But on the other hand, doesn't mean you have to let them in either. I mean, it may not be their fault. That doesn't mean they can come in. I agree with you. I agree with Michael. It's not their fault. But that doesn't also mean that we have to let everybody in the country who wants to come in. I mean, there are certain limits. If we're a welfare state, I'd be certainly against having illegal immigration in this country. You know, you can't take care of the world. You know, you have to protect your own country. And people coming in here and taking away social services and hospitalization and schools and welfare monies and this and that, and you let them in by the truckload, then no one's going to have anything, you know? And I agree with Michael, we should stop the socialism. Then you can open the borders, probably. You know, then people are only coming, they're going to work. Now, we are a country, you know, built on immigration. But we built it on immigration when there was no welfare. People came here and they participated and they worked and they could be the best they could be. They were individuals. And that's what made America great. And that's a wonderful thing. I have no problem with that. If somebody wants to come here from another country and work and take care of themselves and not live off others, I have no problem with that. You know? But if they're going to come here and live with other people, then I have a problem. And so, as long as you have a welfare state, you can't have open borders.
Fair enough. Now, I read on your website that you had a battle with cancer.
Yes, I did.
For which you turned to alternative medicine. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in alternative medicine. And I believe that I'm not a big fan of doctors and hospitals, and I believe that the FDA is another illegal organization. I believe the another government authority, like we just banned the Fedra, which I think is a joke. And I think that the FDA is okay if they would just say, we're going to give you the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval, and then the individual decides for themselves whether they want to follow their thoughts or not. In other words, the FDA says, we don't approve of this. Okay, you don't approve of it. Now it's my choice as an individual to decide whether I want to take it or not, you know, not the FDA's choice. And so I'm against the FDA having the right to ban stuff here. What I'm for is prevention. Alternative medicine is a wonderful way to prevent getting sick. And it would help healthcare in this country tremendously if enough people understood it. You know, what alternative medicine does, it builds up your immune. You see, a doctor doesn't stop you from getting sick. He can only help you after you're sick. And so the point is to build up your immune system, so that's the only defense you have against sickness. And if you build up your immune system, your chances of getting sick or cancer are much more remote. And so I'm a big believer in alternative medicine, building up the immune system. And when I had cancer, I went to a doctor, a very, very highly regarded doctor, you know. And I had bladder cancer, and he wanted to cut out my bladder and rebuild my bladder with my intestines, and he wanted to cut up my prostate. And I said, I'm not doing that. There's no way. He said, you got to do it. And to make a long story short, because I don't want to get into all the gory details, he told me to do it my way or the highway. So I took the highway. I said, I'm not doing that, you know. And I wanted a very, very strict, by the way, don't you think it's very arrogant of him that I can only do it his way, not what I wanted to my own body?
Well, sure, you got your choice, either poison or a knife or a radiation gun.
Exactly.
And you get to choose between those three things.
Yeah, just the attitude that I had to do it his way, I had to cut all this stuff out of my body, you know, or else he wouldn't work with me.
So what did you do instead?
So I went on a very, very strong alternative health kick, and for about 8 months I was taking about 160 pills a day. Pills and homeopathy, vials of liquids and many, many vitamins, minerals, herbs. I met this doctor down in Florida. I met him on the phone, actually. And he put me on, and I went on a very strict regimen with him. And I had a type 3/4 very aggressive tumor. And the thing about bladder cancer is if it stays contained within the bladder, you'll be okay. But if it breaks the wall of the bladder and gets into the bloodstream, you're a dead man. So my tumor was right on the edge of breaking out of the wall. And it hadn't broken through yet. So I went on this regimen to stop it from growing. And we stopped it from growing. And I did it for 8 months, and I got really, really healthy. I mean, my blood, my cholesterol, my triglycerides, everything. I got really healthy from this regimen. And then I went to another doctor, and he made a small incision in my bladder, like almost like a patch on a tire. And he took out the cancer and sewed it back up, and that was the end of it. And it was done. And I have my bladder, I have my prostate, I have all my parts. I'm healthy. There's no more cancer, you know, and everything's good. I mean, it's not like the cancer's in remission. There is no more cancer, and so it's over.
And this really is another case of states' rights, isn't it?
States' rights? How do you get states' rights? Individual rights? You mean states' rights with the FDA? You mean? Or?
Yeah. In terms of the FDA being able to come in and overrule.
Oh, the FDA, look, if I would have won the governor's race, I mean, one of my things when I was running for governor was, and, you know, I did get almost 30% in that race, in the four-way race. I did very well when I ran for governor. One of my programs was I was going to make Nevada the alternative medicine oasis of America and allowing the doctors to practice their alternative medicine there and not make things illegal. Like many people in America today go to Mexico and Germany and other countries to get healthy, to get better.
If they can afford it.
Yeah, if they can afford it, right. Because they can't find their treatments here, but they have their treatments in other countries. So if I became president, one of the things I will do is work and make alternative medicine a very, very strong part of the health care of this country and let people learn about prevention. Instead of getting sick first, prevent yourself from getting sick. You know, like I had diabetes once, and I became very good friends with Dr. Robert Atkins, who passed away recently. He was one of my closest friends in life.
The guy from the Atkins diet, the famous diet that everybody and their mother's on now.
Yes, exactly. And Bobby, I had this very high blood sugar. And Bobby said, Aaron, you know, I can cure you of this if you just do this, this, and this. I said, it can't be that simple, Bob. I said, I'd be doing it. He says, no, the AMA wants people to take these pills and insulin and all this stuff. But if you just stop eating the carbohydrates and all the starches, your diabetes will go away. I said, it can't be. Come on, it can't be that simple. He said, Bob, millions of people die from diabetes. You know, blind, they die from diabetes every year. We got to stop eating certain foods, and it goes away. He said, yeah, if you're a type 2 diabetic. He said, yeah. So I tried it. And sure enough, my diabetes went away. I have no more blood sugar problem because I stopped eating those foods. You know? And my cholesterol went down, my triglycerides. I mean, it's just amazing. It's just amazing. And so I have very, very little respect for the healthcare industry in America. It's all about money and gouging people and prescription medicines and drug companies. You know, the FDA and the drug companies, the AMA, all work together. And it's a disgrace to the American people. People can't afford to live anymore. They can't afford their medicine. You know, all these people rely on these doctors for these blood pressure pills and this pill and that pill. I'm not a doctor. I can't pretend to diagnose people. But I can only tell you from my own experience that my experience with doctors in hospitals and drugs has not been very good. They killed my father, basically. My mother had a stroke because of a doctor. I mean, what you want to do in life to be healthy is to have prevention. You want to build your immune system, because that's what's going to protect you in your lifetime, is your immune system. And so whoever listens to this show, just build your immune system out there, and that's the best thing you can do for your health.
All right, well, speaking of prevention, let's talk about guns.
Sure.
Where do you stand on the Brady Bill and
I'm against
all the
other
stuff? What about the assault weapons ban, too?
I'm against gun control. You know, it's plain and simple. You know, you have a right to bear arms, and, you know, it's real simple. If the government can have guns and the criminals can have guns, then I'm going to have a gun, you know, at least have the right to have a gun. Now, I'm not a gunny myself, but at least I want to know that I have a right to carry a gun. It's my right to bear arms. And I have a right to protect my family and my friends. And as Thomas Jefferson says, you know, the reason they want you to have guns is to protect yourself against an out-of-control government. If there's any government that's getting out of control, it's ours. So, you know, I don't believe in gun control. And the government certainly has no right to know who's bearing arms and who's not. So they can go there and take them from you. You know, it's none of their business. Government. See, the whole essence of my philosophy is that government works for me. You know, they're my servant. I'm not their servant. I own my life, and I have hired these people to be my servant. Okay? Now, I mean, imagine you're driving your car down the highway, and you're minding your own business, obeying all the traffic laws. And all of a sudden, you look up in your rearview mirror, and you see a police car coming up behind you. How does it make you feel? Safe and secure, or uncomfortable? Everybody says uncomfortable.
Definitely uncomfortable.
But why would you be uncomfortable if they're your servant? You're uncomfortable because you know that they can do with you whatever they want. And there's not dilly squat you can do about it, because they have all the power. And when I grew up, that's not what America was like. I wasn't afraid of the cops when I was a kid. You know, the cops in my neighborhood. I wasn't afraid of them. They worked for me. People understood that the cop was there to serve you. They were there to help you, to serve and protect, you know. Now it's law enforcement, enforcing laws, you know. And it's a very, very ugly situation we're in today. And so when it comes to guns, you know, I don't believe in gun control, the Brady Bill, anything like that. But everybody has a right to bear arms, you know. I do believe that if you're a felon, I'm not a felon, but if you've committed a violent act, then I would have a problem with it. If you've not been responsible with a weapon, and you've hurt somebody, then you belong in jail and you should stay there.
That would still be none of the national government's business, though, right?
No, it's state government.
Right.
Exactly. No, the federal government has no say in it. The federal government has no say in the Second Amendment, you know? And but I do believe that if you commit violence with a gun, you go to jail. You know, I don't believe in violence. I don't believe in fraud. I don't believe in theft. You know? And those are the few things that I believe you should be in jail for. America has the highest prison population in the world. Why? Because we have the most stupid laws and the most enforced laws. And, you know, we're a country that doesn't obey the Constitution, but we obey all these little petty laws, all these minor things. I mean, I read a story the other day that just blew my mind. Three people were importing lobster for, I think it was Honduras, from some South American or Central American country. And it was packaged incorrectly. It was in a plastic bag as opposed to a cardboard container. And they each received 8 years in jail.
Okay? In federal prison?
Federal, yes. Think about that. 8 years in jail. Three people. And followed the other country's guidelines. I mean, it's sick what's happening here. It's sick what's happening here. You know? I mean, I read about little girls, you know, went to a closet in a school and took some candy. I mean, and the things that they fingerprinted her, they put her into jail. A 13-year-old, 12-year-old girl. I mean, what's happened to America? We've lost any sense of rationale. You know, common sense. We've become a very mean-spirited, cynical country. And, you know, even our money supply is fake. It's all fiat currency. It's all fake money that the Federal Reserve just prints at will, you know?
So as the dollar declines
what's
rapidly.
That?
Oh, that's a very timely point when the American dollar is in rapid decline versus all the foreign currencies right now.
It's not even a currency. It's not, you know, I mean, it is a currency, but there's nothing intrinsic about it. There's no value in the dollar, you know? And just a waste away. I mean, imagine at one time, if you were a millionaire in America, you were set for life. You know, you could live forever. A millionaire meant something. Now, you know, the average home goes for $300,000-$400,000. I mean, it's crazy what's happening. People can't afford to live. And people don't own their homes anymore. They're always paying them off to the bank. You know, people don't own their homes. They're on a treadmill. The Federal Reserve Act has created a treadmill where people are enslaved to the banks. In the old days, you know, at least you could own your home. Now you don't even own your home. Now and you have all these taxes to pay. I mean, I owned a home, and I ended up selling it. It was $26,000 a year just in taxes. And then they're going to raise it to $50,000 a week just to pay taxes on your home. So how could that be? If you live there your whole life, and all of a sudden you're not working anymore, and they can tax you. You can't live where you want to live anymore. You can't live in your own home. You're forced to sell your home, you know? And that's wrong. I don't believe in property taxes. I think property taxes are a gross injustice on people, you know? But
you say on your website that you're in favor of a national sales tax to replace the income tax. Now, I'm all in favor of getting rid of the income tax, but the national sales tax, something like that is forbidden by the United States Constitution, isn't it? A direct capitation?
No, it's not. It's just the opposite. The Constitution says that the federal government raises money two ways, through tariffs and excise taxes. An excise tax is a sales tax. So it's not forbidden in any way. That's exactly what the Constitution calls for.
Well, but it says that no direct taxes shall be laid, only by apportionment among the several states, too, right?
Right.
So in your system, then, we'd all pay our sales tax to the state, and then the state would pay the national government, or we'd all pay directly to the national government?
Oh, I would think that the states would dispute. I would think that the way it would work would be you pay a sales tax, the sales tax goes to the state, whatever the state's responsibility is to the federal government, they'll give them.
Right. Which is quite upside down from the way it is now, where the national government is a major source of revenue to all the states.
Well, no, but not really. The first government takes the money from the states and they give them back a portion of it.
Right.
So the states would get the money and give it to the federal government. And that way, if you cut down all these departments, the federal government could survive on a minimal amount of money. The whole trick to bring back prosperity to America is you've got to cut spending. You've got to cut the budgets way, way, way down. I mean, the government's job is to protect our borders, to have an army, to coin money, you know. There's certain things that the federal government's supposed to do, and they should be funded enough to take care of those few things. And the rest of it has nothing to do with them anymore. It's up to the states to decide those issues.
And I suppose, I guess this is back to foreign policy, I suppose that you're opposed to the international institutions like the United Nations, the World Trade Organization, the IMF?
Most definitely. Most definitely opposed to it. You know, I mean, I do think we should have free trade, you know, with other countries. I don't believe in NAFTA and GATT, but I believe I should be able to trade with somebody from China.
Well, why don't you explain that to people maybe who don't understand? Why would you be against the WTO but for free trade?
Well, because WTO is an institution run by bureaucrats and elite people who control it. It's not about free trade. You know, if you're going to have free trade, like GATT, you know, GATT's 22,000 pages long, okay? And I remember that. Somebody said it weighed 365 pounds, and no one's ever read it. You know what I mean? Imagine, you know, people don't even know what it says, but what really, if you want free trade, all it takes is a paragraph. We have free trade between these countries. And then people freeze with it. It doesn't take 22,000 pages to say you have free trade. It's controlled trade by the government. They decide what you can do and what you can't do. And what I'm saying is I believe in free trade amongst people and countries, so people from each country can trade with each other, but I don't believe it should be controlled by a bureaucratic system. If that makes any sense to you.
Sure, it makes perfect sense to me. But I know, you know, a lot of people just, you know, if they're for free trade, they're for the WTO, and they don't differentiate, so...
No, there's a big difference. No, NAFTA, yeah, the terrible, terrible documents. But, and the person, see, again, it's part of the spin. They say NAFTA and GATT are free trade, but they're not free trade. So when you say you're for free trade, well, that means you're for NAFTA and GATT, which is not the same, which is not true.
Right, and it also fools the people, many people, especially on the left, who are against NAFTA and the WTO. It fools them into believing that free trade is the problem, and that
exactly.
It needs to be more managed instead of less managed.
Exactly. Exactly correct. It's a reverse on everybody. But that's what they do. That's why they're such geniuses. They do that very, very, very well. A friend of mine told me once, when immigrants used to come to America, they would take an oath, right, to the Republican form of government. And then what they found out was that by saying the Republican form of government, they used to vote Republican. So they changed it to a Democratic form of government in the oath. Now they vote Democrat.
Oh,
it's a simple little twist, but it's the truth. That's what they do. It gets down to those kind of nuances, you know? And it's sick. It's just, you know, it's not about government serving us anymore. It's about how they can intimidate us and get us to do what they want, the people in power to do what they want. But they don't want to serve us. You know, it's just a big paddle game. And if you want to come back to a free country, you know, you can't keep voting for the Republicans and Democrats, no matter what they promise you. And that's how they get ahead, by promising people this for free, that for free, this for free. You know, say, so I don't want anything from you. I just want to be free to do what I want to do. Just let me be free. I mean, can you imagine if the Federal Reserve didn't print so much money, what the cost of living in this country would be? It'll be minuscule to what it is. America wouldn't have priced itself in the markets anymore. You know, our labor rate here is so much higher than other countries because the whole standard of living here, the cost of living, rather, has gotten so expensive. You know, and the reason why the cost of living is so expensive is because the Federal Reserve prints money by the truckload. And the more you print of it, the less it becomes worth. Therefore, the more things cost. It's like many people say, I bought a house. I paid $100,000 for it, now it's worth $300,000. Wow, look how it went up in value. I say, no, you're missing the point. The house did not go up in value. What really happened was the dollar went down in value. It takes more dollars to buy the same thing. The house didn't change. The dollar keeps going down in value in this country, and that's why the cost of living is so high.
Sure, and a third of the national budget is just interest on the debt.
Exactly. Exactly. And plus, very few people know you have $44 trillion in unfunded liabilities coming up in the next couple of decades. Where's that money going to come from to pay that $44 trillion? The Fed's going to have to print. There's only two choices. They either create the money to pay it off, another $44 trillion, or you renege on it. They're not going to renege on it. So you have all this money that's coming up to be printed out of nothing. So the dollar's worth is dog do.
Or even better, created on a keyboard and not even printed.
Yeah, exactly. It's just computer entry. Exactly. It's like this. You know, you go to You go to a bank. Let's say you want to open a restaurant. You want to buy $25 million. Let's make some big number. And the bank says, okay, we'll give you the $25 million. So they put a computer entry into your bank account. Presto, there's $25 million in your bank account. Where'd that money come from? They created it out of thin air. They just made it. Now you have to work and pay them back the interest plus the principal on that money that they create out of nothing. So in essence, you're a slave. They can make money for nothing, and you got to work your tail off to pay them back, right? And so you're enslaved to them. It's like the old plantations, you know? The old black people go to work, pick cotton, and they'd be given these little wooden nuggets that will call money, and they'd take those nuggets and go to the store, the company store, and buy their cigarettes, whatever they bought, and turn the money back in. Right? That's what this is. That's what this is. They just print money out of nothing. It has no value. It's monopoly money, and people keep taking it. And they get caught into the system. And pretty soon, you know, they're not going to even want to give you money. It's all going to be on cards or chips or, you know, and they're just going to control everything and everybody. Rothschild said it very well a long time ago. He said, I can't have who makes the laws of a country as long as I control its currency. And that's what it's about. Whoever controls the currency, you know, controls everything. They control the Congress. They control the president. They control everything because they control the money supply. They buy whatever they want. They do whatever they want. And that's one of the things the government's supposed to be doing. That we, in other words, like the government is supposed to be coining money. That's one of their responsibilities, right? But they don't do that. But they do go after people who smoke pot when they're not supposed to. So they've given up their responsibility they're supposed to have and taken others they're not supposed to have.
Yeah, that's right. They privatize the currency and then they nationalize everything else.
Exactly. It twisted all around because they didn't like the Constitution. So it kept them out of power.
Well, Mr. Rousseau, you're a pretty late comer to the libertarian race here. Is there a particular reason for that? Did you just decide to enter? Or?
Well, you know, for me, it's this. It's I can't stand what's happening to America. It disturbs me a great deal. And I want to do whatever I can do to change it. I mean, I made a video called Aaron Rousseau's Mad as Hell some years ago talking about this. I ran for governor in Nevada to try to let people in Nevada know. And now I see where we're heading, and I see the Libertarian Party, and I see two very nice guys running for office there. You know, two very smart gentlemen. I've never met them, but I'm sure that the three of us have very similar philosophies. But I think the difference between myself and them and why I decided to run is having my background in Hollywood and my six Academy Award nominations for my movies and the winning Emmy and a Tony and, you know, managing Bette Midler and Cher and Susan Sarandon, all these people I've worked with over the years, you know, I have a higher profile than they do. And I think that I'll get a lot more press and be able to raise the level of the debate in America more so than the other candidates. And I think that in my doing that, maybe if I'm good enough and people get behind the campaign and I can organize some big concerts around America against the draft, I can get into the debates this year. And if I get into the debates, then we have a real chance to make change. And that's why I've entered the race. I'm sure the three of us are all pretty much similar in our beliefs. We may have differences in certain areas, you know, like immigration or this or that, but nothing that's overwhelming. But I think I can add a spin and a sizzle to the campaign that the others may not be able to do and get more press attention and raise the level of the debate higher because of that. You know, so that's why I entered the race. Because I feel so determined to make a change in this country and to bring freedom back that that I'm offering myself up to the Libertarians and Libertarian Party. Here's what I got, guys. If you want to use this, here I am. You know, you can use me to help the Libertarian Party elevate up to another place and to challenge George Bush and whoever the Democratic nominee is in the debates and get a lot more press attention. So I offer myself up to the party and the people in the party. If they want me, I'm there for it, you know, because I think I'll get a lot more attention. I mean, I just saw a poll today that someone's running, but between the three or four of us, I got like 64%. Of the vote so far in that poll.
Well, and you've only been in the race for, a week and a half?
About a week and a half, something like that. Yeah, I mean, I think people recognize, you know, the way I can help things, you know. And I think that the party, I think they want that. And I'm here to offer it. You know, it's not about ego or anything more than just saying, hey, you know, I'm willing to offer myself up. I've got all this background in Hollywood. We know how the press works. They like that. They want to spin. They want to be able to. It's like Schwarzenegger with running for governor. You know, they'll write about me first, and they'll write about other people that I'm opposing. And for that reason, and that's why I'm running. You know, if there was somebody running that I really thought believed like I did, and had believed in individual freedom, and could get more attention and raise the debate, I would back them. You know, but I think of the candidates running, then I'm probably the one that can achieve that the best. You know. And so I'm going to run because I believe that the country's got to has to change, and I'm going to do whatever it takes. And that's why I'm running. I hope it's not too long-winded an answer.
No, that's fine. I'd like to make a wager with the audience. I'd bet you guys a dollar that if we could destroy the life of George W. Bush by making Aaron Russo president, we'd probably be a lot better off.
What was that wager? I missed that one. What did you say?
Oh, man, that was going to be a funny joke. It would have been a lot better if you'd heard it the first time. It's going to really suck now, but what I said was I want to bet everybody in the audience a dollar that if we destroy George Bush's life and replace him with you, that we'll all be a lot better off. This is a Trading Places reference thing.
I got it. Right. Eddie Murphy and Danny Aykroyd, huh? Me and Bush changing places, huh?
Yeah, I've seen that movie a million times.
Thank you. That was a good movie. You know, it's funny. Of all the movies, I really like The Rose the best of all. But
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
You never saw The Rose? I particularly think that's one of the greatest music movies ever made. I really do. I love that movie. You should watch it. It's really, I mean, Bette Midler. It was Bette Midler playing a rock and roll star that everybody thought was Janis Joplin, even though it really wasn't. The character was a compilation of a 60s character. You know, if it would have been a man, they would have said it was Jim Morrison. But the music was great. Her performance was brilliant. Brilliant performance the woman did.
Yeah, I might be a bit too young for the whole Bette Midler thing.
Well, now you're thinking of Bette Midler as she is today. But in that movie, you guys, you watch through it, you won't think of her the same way you think of her today. Remember, when you play a movie, you're an actress, you take on a character. You don't think about Bette Midler as she is now, you know?
All right, I'll give you that. Hey, right before we go, we're almost out of time here, but...
Sure.
Right before we go, I forgot to ask you about the environment, and I'd like to touch on that, and then I want to ask you more about these rock concerts that you talk about putting on to oppose the draft. Maybe we can wrap up with that, but many people's major criticism of libertarians is that, oh, well, they'll just let the corporations dump whatever they want, wherever they want, and have no environmental regulations at all. And I'd like to give you a chance to defend yourself against that accusation, because you know it's coming.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When it comes to the environment, you know, I totally believe in clean air and clean water. You know, I totally believe we have to have a clean environment. I mean, I believe it's a must. And what I believe is there should be a constitutional amendment passed giving the federal government the authority to get involved in the environmental area. I think they don't have that authority now. And I think they should to a certain... Because, you know, if you're upstream, you know, if you're upriver from somebody else and they're downriver from you, and they're polluting the water... in another state, it's very difficult to get anything done. The founding fathers are very smart. When they set up the Constitution, they gave the federal government certain powers that would be easier for a central government to deal with than with the states dealing with. Like the coining of money would be uniform. Like protecting the borders, you know. It was done in a way so that the federal government could facilitate things that the states would have more, you know, building a highway from one state to the other so the roads would meet. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
It was easier done through a central government's eye. I have to think that maybe the environment might be the same thing. I'm not sure. I've talked to people on both sides, and I have great difficulty. I understand the other point of view about everything being privatized, and then private people would take care of it, and I understand that as well. But I have difficulty in coming to a real solution on that problem. I'm not sure I know the right answer. You know, but I know one thing. I would certainly have other sources of energy. You know, I would push for private people to develop other sources of energy. So I don't like the federal government having too much power in any way. So I would look for a private way to take care of the environment. But I'm not sure I really know the answer to that question. It's a very, very difficult question, you know.
Well, how refreshingly honest from a guy running for office. I don't think I've ever heard a politician say he didn't know the answer to something.
Well, you got to be honest, and what the hell is the point? If you don't know something, you got to find the answer. And the whole point of being in office is to find the right answers to deal with your problem. You know, I can just take the libertarian stand and saying, well, it should be, you know, it's all private, people should do this. You can take the other stand. But the truth is, you know, we all want, whether you're a libertarian or a left-winger or a right-winger, I think everybody, you know, wants to have clean air, clean water, and live in a clean environment. And the question is, what's the best way to achieve that, you know, without giving up rights? And that's really the dilemma, because, you know, if I'm downstream of somebody and they're upstream and they're pouring, you know, some sort of toxic waste into the water and they're in a different state and I can't stop them, you know, that's wrong. So there's got to be some way around that problem, and there's got to be some way around that dilemma. I don't want to drink polluted water, you know. So we've got to find the right answers. I also know I would never let the corporations pollute the rivers and the waterways. I mean, that's disgusting what's happened to our water here. I mean, you can't drink water here anymore. So, I mean, it has to be fixed. And so the question is, what's the best way to fix it? And if I were the president, I would meet with everybody from every side and look for the best answers. You know, I don't claim to know everything.
Fair enough. Now, you got one more minute here, maybe less than that, to tell us about the concerts that you're going to try to put on here.
Well, what I want to do with the concert, the draft is a very, very important issue, and it affects the young people very, very much. And young people generally don't vote, and they don't get involved in government, and I know why, because they feel distanced from it. But this is going to affect their lives greatly, and what I want to do is put on a series of concerts across America. I come out of producing concerts, and I was the first one to ever bring Led Zeppelin to America. I used to put on all the Grateful Dead shows, and you know, we've got so many shows I put on. The Who, Jethro Tull, The Doors.
So you're going to try to do this coast to coast here this year?
What I want to find bands that want to participate in stopping the draft and who want to help out and devote some time and energy to helping us beat that issue, you know, before it starts. And so I'm going to go on the hunt. And if you know any bands that want to help out, you let me know. Because we want to put on a series of shows across the country to raise the awareness level about the draft coming.
Great. You know, and all right, one more time. What's your website?
It's just what I was about to do. You read my mind. www.russo, RussoForPresident, russoforpresident.com. Please go there. I have a bunch of videos on there, and I talk about everything, and you know, you'll get a good sense of who I am. You can see me in video, so it's not just a voice on a radio to you or on the web right now. And I think you'll find a lot of interesting things on the website. And there's a petition there you can sign to stop the draft. And I'd love for everybody listening to just get involved and try and help fix America and make it a better country to live in. And so God bless everybody listening, you know. I wish you nothing but the best and fight for your freedom. Always remain an individual. And never give
into
slavery.
All right, everybody. Aaron Russo is an Emmy Award-winning producer. You've all seen Trading Places a million times, I'm sure. He's the producer of that and The Rose. He ran for the governor of Nevada in 98 and is currently running for president as a libertarian. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Mr. Russo. It's been great.
Thank you, but I appreciate it very much.